Pulling the probe, Batman. It's really exciting.
Bruce Wayne, Esquire.
I'm Batman.
I am the Prince.
Welcome to Superstitious and Cowardly, a Batman podcast with no Batman at all. I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer. Ryan is gone. He went to visit his Canadian girlfriend. In this podcast, we normally talk about Batman. We're the Battlestar Galactica 1980 of Batman podcasts.
But today we're going to be doing something a little different by taking a look at some of the first appearances of a few of Batman's contemporaries at this time. We'll be looking at the first appearance of Superman from 1938's Action Comics 1, Wonder Woman from 1941's All-Star Comics 8, Captain America Comics, also from 1941, guess who's in that one, Green Arrow from More Fun Comics 43 from 1941, Plastic Man in Police Comics number 1, and also a special treat, All Boy Commandos from Detective Comics 64 from 1942.
If you have no background on that, it sounds kind of odd, All Boy Commandos.
So, the original idea for this was that it was going to be, because we're going to be looking at some Justice League stuff down the line.
Oh, yeah.
Some World's Finest stuff. So, it's going to be the rest of, and probably Trinity at some point. So, it was going to be, we're going to look at Superman, Wonder Woman, and Justice Society, which is the prototype Justice League. Have you ever read the Justice Society at this time?
The closest thing that I read, or the closest time period stuff that I read, because I've read that team, is the Justice Society, Justice League crossover stuff.
No, I was talking about like the original like run. It was like a crossover between two companies, so it was like their best characters. It had like a special club, and then they'd have their own adventures and meet up and be like, boy, that was tough, wasn't it? And if you had your own like series, you weren't allowed to be a member. You were just a charter member.
Is that why Batman and Superman? I saw the intro for All-Star 8, and they're like, they're just honorary members.
Yeah, but
whatever.
They're not like full members. So it's like, oh, well, that doesn't really make sense. So we just kind of skipped it and decided to look at some... something a little different, some things that are connected to Batman in some ways, and also some personal favorites of ours at this time.
I just like that we're seeing what's going on in this, not necessarily in the same world, because some of the stuff's technically outside of it, continuity-wise at the time, but we're seeing what's going on in comics at the time. That isn't just Batman. It's the things that may or may not influence these writers or each other or anything like that. And I like seeing that. I mean, we'll talk about Superman in just a second, but that was super fun read.
It was a super fun read.
I see what I did there on accident. How's things been going for you, Chris?
Fuck you care.
I'm trying to do banter.
So without further ado, because it's going to be a long one today, guys, for us, because, you know, we once took an entire episode just to do the first fucking issue of Detective Comics.
Yep.
So without further ado, let's look at the first appearance of the Daily Sun in Action Comics number 1 from 1939. Ah, shit, it was the Daily Star. So what is there really to say about the Man of Steel? Created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuler in 1933 in a story called Reign of the Superman, about a bum that gains superpowers through an experimental drug that he uses for crime and dickery, only to lose his powers and lament that his legacy is that of a villain. Obviously refined the idea to create the ultimate superhero known the world over. Since the 30s, Superman has been in complete and utter constant publication, and had radio shows, serials, TV series, movie serials. Now, I'm sure there is a Superman serial, though, right? Cartoons and movies. Superman also represents the science fiction element of the Trinity. So what are your thoughts on Superman, John?
For the longest time, I recognized the importance of Superman in comics in general, and especially in DC stuff. For a very long time, I didn't necessarily care that much. It was just another character that I'd see sometimes in crossovers if I was reading a particular run of Justice League. But when Rebirth came along, you know, over a year ago now, I really, really liked him. Like, I had reason to care all of a sudden. And I don't have kids or anything right now. But it was during the Rebirth stuff where the New 52 Superman had died. And the Superman that we know, Earth kind of one Superman, or alternate Earth one kind of Superman, whatever Earth he's actually from, you can send hate mail to sac.alfred@gmail.com. But we would recognize you and I as Superman from Earth one. Had still survived somehow out of some other events that had transpired a few years prior. And he still had Lois, the Lois that we know. And he had his son, John, biological son, no clone, no anything, his actual son. And he had a family now. It wasn't just him trying to do the right thing, remembering a family that he had through his parenting. He had his own family. And it was super, super great. But when he had a family, it became more sincere to me. And Dan Jurgens, he wrote Superman before. He's writing Action Comics right now. And then, I know I'm going to say it wrong, I think it's Tomasi is writing the Superman run. And those runs together were just really, still are, very sincere and heartfelt. And that's what kind of gravitated towards me. It's not that he's an alien. It's that he has these relationships that actually matter to me now. So now I really, really like Superman. Superman before this point, I can't identify with him.
I think it's interesting that my favorite Superman stories are kind of like out of continuity ones. Like Red Sun Superman and All-Star Superman, I think is my favorite.
All the Elseworlds kind of
stuff? Yeah, I suppose. Or like Lex Luthor, Man of Steel. Although, because those are kind of the ones that I've read. I haven't read a lot of the runs, but I still have no problem with Superman. So anyways, enough of that jibba-jabba. Let's talk about Action Comics 1. What do you think of that cover, John?
It's really pretty. It's that iconic cover. It's him lifting up that car. And I always thought that it was him saving people from a car. It is not. At all. And we will talk about that about halfway into the issue. We're going to see what that is. But that's the other thing that I like about the cover. It represents a scene that actually happens in the issue. And we don't see that a lot in comics, especially now, especially then, and especially ever.
So our first page sums up with a nice little summing up of this so-called Superman. It's pretty clear to see where they got their inspiration from on this classic story. The tale of Son Goku as told in Dragon Ball. Well, no, obviously it's kind of the tale of Moses. I mean, our authors are good Jewish boys after all. Although that might just be a coincidence. There's always, like, the whole Superman is Jesus metaphor, which I never really understood because, like...
It makes more sense later, but as a concept of, like, creating the character in the moment, I don't think that was the intention.
Probably not, but I've never really got the whole Superman is Jesus thing because Jesus was all about peace. But when he had to stand up to them, he didn't beat the shit out of them or melt their faces with a heat ray. So next, we get some interesting information about our boy. It seems the creators have nerfed him a bit, limiting him to jumping and being able to actually be hurt by extraordinary methods that don't involve glowing rocks. Do you know where these staples were first introduced, John?
I'm going to guess we're looking at Silver Age Superman.
Oh, not at all. The Fletcher cartoon animation for him, which are just fantastic early animations. I mean, they really hold up.
I think
up
I remember
today,
a VHS tape, when I was a kid that had a lot of 40s animation in it.
They were the first ones to not necessarily make him fly, but the way they animated him made it look like he was flying because it was just easier. And then the radio was actually the one that involved the glowing rocks. That's where Kryptonite came from.
I like how in this issue, I was looking for it. They don't mention that his planet's Krypton at all. So they introduced that in a later episode. And the thing is, Ma and Pa Kent don't exist. He was an orphan. He was always an orphan. But he went to an orphanage. Like, some guy picked him off on the side of the road, and then was like, oh, I'm just going to take him to the fire station.
So Superman is already kind of changed by, like, other media stuff, which is something that'll happen to Batman, and we'll talk about in the
very
future.
Very much so.
But, you know, enough about that for now. This isn't a Batman podcast. We also get a scientific explanation for his powers. About how, like, ants can pick up stuff, so it's really
not
that weird.
Yeah, it's evolution. It's not any Kryptonian would have been this way, regardless of what planet he was on. It has nothing to do with yellow suns or being on a different planet, nothing like that, which is, it makes that more impactful. Like, he could be anywhere in space near a red sun. It doesn't matter at this point.
But anyways, our story begins, media res, where we get a glimpse of this Superman takes exactly zero shits. He has a woman bound and gagged and bursts into the governor's home to tell him to wake the fuck up and pardon a woman on death row.
He ditches her outside.
He does. He's also got the real killer tied up on your lawn, so go pick that up too.
That whole transaction, just even getting to the governor, we have two pages where Superman knocks on the door and then his gay lover, I don't know who this guy is, if he's a butler or what, answers the door. And Superman's like, I need to see the governor. And the butler, or whoever this guy is, does what any reasonable person would do. He's like, no, you can't just walk up in the middle of the night.
He's not reasonable, though, because
he's not.
After Superman bursts in, I almost said Batman. After Superman bursts in, he shoots him. Even though he's been saying, hey, you got to stop this murderess.
No, even him shooting him, he's like, you're just, he crushes the steel door that guarding the governor, which is a real odd choice for a home to have a steel door like that. And he's like, okay, you busted down this door, even though I told you to, but I didn't expect it. And you're being crazy. You're just busting in the middle of the night, spouting all these crazy things and having a real show of strength and appearing somewhat aggressive. You can't just expect that. The butler guy is having normal reactions, I think.
No, he shoots him, though, so he doesn't. So anyways, he's able to show the confession to the governor and get the woman cleared. So next we go to a typical day at the Daily Star, where we're introduced to poor schlub Clark Kent. Clark gets a hot tip that some guy is beating his wife, and I guess in the 30s, that was what a newsie's job was, to sort that kind of shit out?
Yeah! Can we... I know we got a lot to cover, but I really want to break this down. So, the equivalent to Perry White, or whatever, they don't give the guy a name, says, hey, you're going to cover Superman stories. And then on his way out, the news phone hotline guys or whatever tells him that some guy's beating his wife. In all that time that it takes Clark Kent to turn to Superman and get to her, no one else responds to this? How did they hear about it? Why aren't the cops there?
He busts in, he makes the beater the BT, and he fucks him up.
He gets him hard. And then the guy, after getting his ass kicked, tries to hit him with a knife that, you know, just shatters, of
course. Or stabbing is actually, there's a word for that. So then the cops show up, and it's Clark like, oh man, Superman just totally came in and beat him up. I'm gonna go now.
They don't question him. It's not like, well, you kind of look like Superman.
So the next we are introduced to Lois Lane, who is a cold bitch. She agrees to go out with Clark that night, mainly just because it involves a free meal. She insults him afterwards, though.
Yeah, it's the whole time of, to most of us, classic Superman just trying to be really meek and not give away that he's Superman.
He cranks it up to 11 in this issue, though.
He really does. We have our mobster guy, I think his name is Butch, wants to cut in, and Superman's like, Clark, anyway, he's like, well, I have to be meek, so I'm just gonna let this guy take advantage of Lois. I shouldn't have to stand up to anybody ever.
Just dance with him, Lois. I'm sure it won't be that long.
And then we can leave right after he puts his hands all over you. Lois, of course, is being a very smart person. It's like, no, I'm not gonna do this. Slaps the guy and then wants to head out.
And she does, and Lois is, like, shown as a very strong, competent woman who's kind of a bitch.
I really liked her.
I liked her in the issue, though.
Yeah, like, anything that she had wasn't her being overbearing or anything. It was, like,
hits it really hard in mocking Clark, because that's just, they're trying to introduce these elements.
Yeah.
But she does come off as pretty cold. So anyways, Muggsy gets super mad that Lois just wouldn't get danced with by him. And so he vows his revenge. Later, the gangster is so pissed he decides to kidnap Lois to teach her a lesson. Best to leave that one alone. Yeah, what do you think? Teaching her a lesson? Because they just grab her and put her in a car full of sweaty means.
Yeah, and they just... Three guys driving in a car with the woman they abducted. And they're just driving away talking about how bad they want to get the guy that she was dancing with for also disrespecting him. And he's going to do some really bad things. Like, this is very dark.
He's going to at least beat the crap out of her. So they go looking for the boyfriend, but it's okay because he's there in the middle of the road dressed up as Superman. He shows up and he beats them a bit before beating 12 shades of piss out of them in their car.
I love that. They start rushing towards him. He jumps over the car because he can't fly, of course. And he picks up the car and he shakes it like it's nothing. And he just shakes everybody else out of the car. And then he fucks up the car. He just smashes up against that rock. So the cover, the same panel that we're seeing right now of him destroying the car. For years and years and years and years, I was thinking, okay, this is Superman trying to stop an accident. He's just saved a bunch of people. No, he was being very, very vengeful and almost killing a lot of people.
He grabs Muggsy and jumps up to the top of a telephone pole and leaves him hanging there ass first. Then he takes Lois home, and she composes a really odd poem about how you can probably hear her thoughts, and it really grinds the comic to a halt. You ever see when he lays his
I just thought I missed, like, a panel, so I was rolling.
Can you hear my thoughts? And it's like, that's fucking weird. It's like the weirdest part of that movie. The next day, Clark pleads for forgiveness, but to no avail.
It's right for Lois to say no. Like, you can't apologize for this. He's basically said, like, hey, you can dance with these creeps. No need to stand up for yourself. And I wouldn't take that from someone like Clark either.
So our comic ends with another quick side story, which is there's like three of them in this issue.
Yeah, they compact a lot. But the thing is, he goes to DC on a train immediately after his boss tells him to go to Africa. And they don't explain why he ignores that and goes to DC. He just goes.
He goes and he finds that there's a corrupt senator that's going to leave some legislation in that's going to lead us to war.
Yeah, it's basically the lobbyist wants the senator to pass a bill, and he wants the bill passed as quick as possible with giving no one the opportunity to read it. That seems oddly familiar.
It does.
To today?
Or Lisa goes to Washington.
Yeah.
From The Simpsons. So so instead of stopping the bill, Clark's just like, oh, that's not right. I'm going to have to fuck with the guy, the lobbyist, who's already paid the money. And the senator hasn't been, like, stopped her in any way.
No. I mean, the thing would be to be Clark Kent the reporter.
So it's actually really funny, like, what he does to him. He just grabs him by the foot and jumps around with him.
Yeah.
And then he starts walking on electrical lines, like, oops, I hope I don't slip and kill us both.
It's pretty much like if you saw some guy just walk across the street juggling a baby, tearing him all over the place.
And then he said, this is how the comic ends. It's crazy. He's like, boy, what a magnificent view. I wonder if I could jump all the way to that next building. And he's like, no, don't. And Superman doesn't. He just, missed. And that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Him just bullying this guy.
It's a continuation to the next issue. But they could have just made this an issue on its own.
Like, oh, was it?
Because it says to be continued in very, very fine print. The lettering's kind of odd on these older comics. But at the very bottom,
I didn't do quite the research I have with the other one.
It's to be continued, and that part is fine. But when you have three different stories, I would have been fine if it was just the halting the execution, or if it was just Superman trying to save Lois from her abductors. This third story, I think, was them just going, oh, crap, we need a couple more pages.
Well, this whole story, if you really notice, is really carefully constructed to just drive home the elements they're creating. Superman, super strong. Superman can jump all over the place. Superman can't be stabbed, can't be shot. He can rip up cars and steel-plated doors, which we all have because of nuclear fallout, which isn't a thing at this point. And, you know, Clark, his identity, his real identity is a bit of a pussy, and Clark's just like, oh, if only she knew.
I think they still could have drove home a lot of those points without the lobbyist and senator story at the end. And also, he could have done so much work as Clark Kent in that instance. Like, that's where he's stronger, is exposing these kinds of...
That is a very good point, actually.
Poor evil things, or... exposing the truth to some degree.
They could have just had another unconnected story and then just made this
a
whole issue. Maybe it's Super Action Comics number 2 is all about this story.
It might be. We did not look into that
because I just thought it was a weird ending. I didn't notice that. Oh, it's very small. So that was Super Action Comics number 1. Coming up next, The Birth of a Wondered Woman. And now for the mystical / magic pillar of the DC Trilogy. I'm going to talk like this the rest of the time.
I'm not editing this out.
I know, you shouldn't. Created by psychiatrist and lie detector.
Psychologist? Man, you're having a hard time.
Psychiatrist. He also invented the lie detector. And why don't you say his name since you're so goddamn good?
I don't think you actually said a full sentence. You might want to start at the beginning of this thing.
Created by psychiatrist and lie detector inventor William Marston, his wife Elizabeth, and his mistress Olive Byrne. Yeah, have you ever heard about this guy?
No.
Wonder Woman, if... there are two things that I'd rather do if we weren't doing this podcast. But since we are, you know, fuck them. I'd like to do a whole thing on the New Gods, the original Jack Kirby New Gods.
Right.
And I'd like to look at all of this guy's Wonder Womans, because they are fucked up. We're going to kind of get, there's a little bit of it in here, but like there's a lot of like weird like, oh, that's, you're getting spanked, huh? And, oh, there's bondage, huh? And you're getting bound. Oh, that's stuff that like you look back, it's like there's a lot of weird sexual shit in here.
So it's good that we have Wonder Woman. It's just not good how she was created, or who created her, maybe.
He was an interesting guy. Obviously, he had a wife and a living mistress.
Roman Polanski's also interesting.
I never expected that out of you. Very true.
It's not that I'm particularly funny, just your reaction just got that one out of me.
I didn't expect that from you, John. I didn't think you knew that much about Roman Polanski and his ways. Okay.
Too long didn't read Roman Polanski. Not that great.
Well, this guy was interesting. He was, obviously, he had a living mistress. His wife raised their kids. I don't know. Sometimes it's called a three-way. Sometimes it's just called it's her mistress, but they all lived together. He was obviously a feminist, put a lot of, you know, interesting things in there, and we have a strong, empowered woman. There's nothing wrong with that.
That aspect is perfectly fine, ahead
of its time, in all
honesty. Oh, absolutely.
They
reference how like strong and smart and capable that she is. Like, they specifically say those things.
Obviously, like the lie detector, he had a golden rope for that. He was big into that. But he was also into some masochist shit, like, what is Wonder Woman's weakness? Get her hands bound. What happens in this story that we find out about Hercules? He bound all the women. He put them into slavery. Like Superman, what more is there really that you can say about Wonder Woman? Pretty much consistently published, except for a brief hiatus during the time of the first crisis. She's been in TV shows, and recently she was part of the feminist movement to take away all movies and real characters away from the men, which started with Ghostbusters and will continue with Doctor Who. I love how people got so mad about that.
They got real salty about that. I was looking at Twitter earlier today, and there was a bunch of neckbeards like giving some comic book creators a hard time because they were trying different things, and they were calling them like social justice warriors, like it was a bad thing, and it was like, so...
Well, social justice warriors isn't necessarily a good thing.
Well, I mean,
there are good aspects to it.
There were a bunch of neckbeards getting really salty.
As we both have about, beards.
We do, but we don't act like neckbeards, though, I don't think. But they were getting really salty about things like trying different things in general, or having different aspects to characters, or... They never seem to have a leg on stand on whenever I see that. It's always them complaining about how it wasn't before, but I don't want things like before. I could just read a bunch of old trades if I wanted that.
Well, I mean, do you know why I'm okay with the Wonder Woman movie doing so well? Because it was actually a pretty good movie.
It was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
My only complaint about that was a little bit CGI. Just a little bit.
The ending wasn't as good as it could have been. That's my only complaint.
And that might be an origin story kind of limitation anyway. But as a whole, just as good as any other movie.
Very good.
Yeah.
Better than, like, Suicide Squad or... Unlike most of DC's superheroes or heroines, Wonder Woman doesn't have a kill code, although it's not really brought up outside of her titles. That's kind of the one thing that kind of separates her from Superman and Batman, other than, you know, a vagina.
They don't have a kill code right now either.
Oh, they don't.
We see even Robin tries to go for top kills against Batman half the time. I don't think anyone has a non-kill code right now. Superman maybe.
Oh, so Batman's been killing people in comics? I don't read them anymore.
You're talking about current comics. I was talking about the stuff that we've been talking about.
No, like in current comics.
Oh, no, no, no.
We're just like in the... No. We're in the pastures right now, dude. That shit's not... I'm talking about like later. She's the one that kind of... let's not mention it, but she kind of kills some people in her own stuff.
Maxwell Lord is probably the most noteworthy kill that she's had in the last, you know, 10 years.
But like, everybody's like, oh, I can't believe you did that. But like in her own books,
she'll chop up
like Ares and shit like that. So without further ado, we have our origin story, or as I like to call it, Wonder Woman versus the Mountain of Text.
This is All-Star Comics 8?
Yes. Our tale begins with
a fucking book. Well, this thing is so text-heavy the whole way through.
So after our author going into full-on cell mode with a huge wall of text, not the first of this issue, we cut to Paradise Island. And what's that? A man has crashed on Paradise Island.
I haven't seen one of those before. Why are we doing Southern?
I don't know. They take him to the hospital, and the queen decides that he's important enough to nurse back to health, being a captain and all.
For being feminist, everyone's outfit is so weird, especially the doctor's. She's wearing some weird choker collar thing that turns into the rest of her tank top dress combination with the sides cut off as well. It's like a weird hello nurse sort of an outfit.
Well, the first thing that the comic tells us that's interesting about Paradise Island is the fact that it looks like it's from ancient Greece.
But they're technologically advanced is what
they imply. The first thing I noticed is that everybody's wearing fetish outfits. Like, the queen, like, is basically wearing a halter top and a mask.
She's wearing some, I mean, this is obviously before, but she's wearing some, like, Madonna-type booby holders.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to call them.
So, like I kind of mentioned, he had interesting tastes. So, it seems that the princess is Florence Nightingaled her way to Steve pretty fucking hard, and the queen has decided the only way to snap her out of this is with a very long and wordy story that has no real bearing on the plot.
It's their origin story of how the Amazons came to Paradise Island. Which she's hearing now for the first time? She's what, like 18, 20, something like that? This is the first time you're hearing about what happened to your people?
And this is two full pages of text with a couple pictures in it.
I thought it was like a weird newsletter insert thing explaining like, hey, this is what you're going to see next time.
Now, something we've kind of alluded to a couple different times, but at this time, it wasn't crazy that a comic book would have a couple prose stories in it.
Right.
With maybe a picture here or there. And they've actually done a couple since then. We might look at, there's a Batman one from the 70s. It's like Night of the Stalker, I think. That's probably not right. Or Grant Morrison in his run, he basically condensed a whole like mini arc for the Joker into one issue called Black Clown at Midnight. you remember that? It has like weird CGI pictures on it.
I remember,
and yeah,
I remember seeing
weird.
The art, and the art kind of, why I really like Grant Morrison stuff, the art kind of turned me off from it a little bit.
The story itself is very experimental and weird for his run, but what isn't with him? So I'm just going to bullet point what happens. They were enslaved by Hercules. They got a magic girdle from the gods to beat up Hercules. And then they found a magic island. And because of the island, everybody's now immortal and all their tech is tight as shit.
Yeah, they got a mirror from Athena, I think. And then they somehow hooked it up to a bunch of beakers and electric wires. Like that somehow made it better. They don't really go into that either.
She uses an Innerocitor to see how Steve got here in the first place.
And very much like the Wonder Woman movie, it's basically Steve is a spy. He's going around and trying to collect information. He's on a dangerous mission. And the way that he ends up trying to escape is when his identities find out, the way he tries to escape is just like in the movie, he escapes in a plane. But this is World War II era, not World War I.
He stumbles on some Nazis.
Yeah.
Who are spies, apparently, because they're apparently on American soil. The typography of this does not make any sense. He goes into this Nazi base. He sees these guys, like, in full uniform, by the way. He's not, like, hiding or anything. He sees that these guys are about to bomb from high orbit American bases.
They're talking about technology that won't exist for, like, 20 years.
Well, he talks about a robot plane, which doesn't exist now. Well, not,
exists.
Not really.
Yeah, they do.
I guess
there's
drones.
Drones.
You can't have a person in it. So anyways, they beat the shit out
what
of him.
A robot?
Put him in the plane, and it's like, oh, this guy will get blamed for our bombings. And it's like, no, you could have done that without
the thing
captain.
That they don't explain, he gets loose, and he goes and tries to take chase after these other planes. They just threw him in there? They didn't tie him up or anything? Why didn't they just kill him before they put him in the plane?
Why indeed, John? Because he just, like, grabs the plane and flies it away.
Tries to chase another plane for as long as he can to try to interrupt their plans to some degree.
Or kill him, I guess.
And he runs out of gas, and that's it. And he just crashes on the island. So it's not him trying to run away. Like, the Wonder Woman movie version of this is a much better.
So anyways, after seeing this, she goes, oh man, I gotta talk to the gods. The goddesses, sorry. Wonder Woman, get out of here. And I'm gonna go talk to them. And they're like, so, did you hear the story? And it's like, oh yeah, you gotta help America. America's the bomb.
America's super great.
America's great.
America's democracy. America.
It's the last bastion of democracy on the planet, and you have to save it.
In my notes, I actually have Athena tells the Queen of the Amazons to select a champion to take Steve back to where he came from, and they can never return. And then in my notes, America. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So the way they're going to decide this is with a sweet no princesses allowed tournament where everybody can compete in, like, the weirdest competitions. We only get to see two
it's
of them,
like,
but they're fucked.
The rejected sports from an Olympics. It's chasing a deer and trying to be faster than it.
Which somebody in a mask was definitely faster.
How do they not know everybody in the island? How good does that mask actually do?
Your backstory is that you are a group of immortals that are living on an island with no men, so there's no reproduction. So
you
should
know
everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Chris, if I put a domino mask on right now, would you be able to recognize me?
Probably.
There we go.
But this is before the 80s, so up until like the 80s, domino masks worked for everything.
So they do a few different contests, and it ends with having two finalists, one being Diana, but they don't really call her that right now. They just call her Princess. And the other
being...
Yeah,
they say that they give her the name Diana.
In a weird way.
To use. But it's like, what the fuck did you call her? Just Princess up to that point?
Yeah, what kind of content? Whatever.
Yeah.
So there's two finalists. There's Diana, and then there's some other girl. And the way they break the tie is they fire guns at each other, and who can ever deflect bullets wins.
Five of them. They get five shots.
It's like playing a weird Russian roulette. You're just shooting somebody and hoping that they miss it.
So Diana does it easy, and then she shoots her buddy in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And then she reveals herself to the queen. It's like, oh, holy shit, it's you.
But talking about that gunfight, it's like, if this were baseball and I hit the batter, they'd get another shot. Like, they could walk and take a base. This is the exact opposite.
And then she gets a sweet America halter top and skirt. And she's on her way to America to defend democracy in the American way, even though they're not technically at war right now.
It's odd that her bracelets aren't anything special right now. And I think later they actually become...
Well, the story mentions that the bracelets are a sign of... We skipped over this because it's so fucking long. That it was like a sign of their bondage, so it's like a never forget thing.
She doesn't have a rope. No other weapons whatsoever. The queen couldn't even give her halter top that apparently gives them more strength or anything.
Magic girdle,
sorry. That sounds worse.
It does.
She gets nothing extra. She just like, okay, here's an outfit change, and that is it. And it makes her look frumpier somehow.
So that's the end of Wonder Woman. There wasn't really much to it.
It's right before she takes action. This is origin, no action, nothing.
He's definitely setting up, like kind of like Superman, we're setting up some things. She's super fast. She can beat a deer, which, as we all know, cars are judged by their deer power.
Yeah.
And, you know, she can deflect bullets. That's supposed to be, you know, going into the war. That's a big thing. She's not quite invulnerable as she would be later.
They give her like two or three steps forward, and then they take away a couple when they say that, you know, all the Amazons are smart and capable, and she's one of the strongest and capable ones that they have. And I mean, if you love somebody, you love somebody, whatever. But that she succumbs to romance so quickly.
I wouldn't necessarily blame that on the comic. That's just kind of the times, don't you think?
Sort of, but
kind of like.
But it's not that she cares about Bruce.
Was like, that was his fiance. Oh, I loved you. And we never saw any of that.
Well, it's not that she cares about something. It's that she cares about something and everyone basically
says. Gives up her entire life for it.
It's just so angsty, so teenager-like that it's hard to take it seriously. It seems more like a detriment than anything else, that if that makes sense.
I do think that's maybe a storyteller. Maybe from that. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So that was Wonder Woman. So let's see some more Nazi spies in Captain America Comics, issue 1. So now we're going to dip our toe into Marvel's most popular and endearing character, Captain America. Whereas a lot of the characters that DC created were like from this 40, like 41 for that period. And there were some changes down the line. A lot of Marvel's ones came in the next couple of decades.
A lot of Spider-Man's Marvel stuff is 60s, 70s,
like 60s and, yeah. And stuff like that. So this is like their oldest character, and obviously the one that's been gripped in the American consciousness the most. And especially recently with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where he's front and center in pretty much all the movies.
Not necessarily for comic book readers, but for average people that don't read comic books, the movies really kicked that off for Captain America. I think he was kind of forgotten in general public kind of a sense.
Well, I think that he was up there, but like a lot of people didn't really know, like, oh, he's a World War II hero that got frozen and all that stuff. And I mean, his movies are probably the more popular ones that are out there.
But
I always hear that Captain America 2 is probably the best that Marvel has to offer. And I don't think that's a bad argument. That's a good movie.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the creators of this one?
Well, we have, and this won't be the first time. I mean, this will be the first time, but not the last. We're going to talk about Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby and Joe Simon are an amazing team from, like, the 40s. They did the first 10 issues of Captain America. Jack went on to pretty much create with other people, have some hand in creating every other popular Marvel character, except for Wolverine.
Wolverine is Lian Wen, who passed away recently, I believe. I dear to God, I hope I got that name right. I'm sorry if I didn't. He also co-created Swamp Thing. But Jack Kirby, yeah, just a lot of stuff.
He had his hand in pretty much everything.
Way more Marvel than DC. He's one of those first ones, and you know he's definitely not the last. A lot of creators do that. He definitely went between publishers a lot. He's probably one of the earlier examples of going between whatever publisher he wanted. He was just trying to make good comics.
Yeah, and he wasn't just a penciler. He's also an amazing writer. Most of the things that he doesn't really get as much credit for, but like it was always like Stan Lee wrote this and Jack would do the... He was also writing it with Stan Lee.
Yeah, because I think Stan Lee wrote around his art. So I think that they're way more involved that way,
yes.
From what I remember. You like the new guy Jack Kirby stuff way more than anything.
Omac is my favorite, because Omac lives so that man may live.
I've heard that phrase so many times.
But I do love Kirby's, like... A famous quote I've heard, I don't remember who said it, but... If you gave Jack Kirby a vacuum cleaner to fix, when you came back to pick it up, you'd get like a time-traveling jetpack. That's just what Jack Kirby did. Like, apparently, like, even the New God stuff goes in different directions because he had no, like, plan of where it was really going. So, like,
it
a
was,
lot of people
it
say
was
that.
Fantastic more than...
Yeah,
well,
it was
anything,
like
yeah.
It was like a mythology in a time where you didn't really have a hard mythology on this stuff. Most comic books like Batman, for example, the mythology was he's been around for 40 years at that point. And that's where you built up that mythology. But this was just like elder gods and he was taken from this and that. So yeah, I love Jack Kirby and I also love his art which isn't quite the same as it would become.
He definitely grows.
He definitely grows.
Over the years, yeah.
But just looking at the cover of this one, what's happening on the cover of this issue?
He's punching Hitler in the fucking face like everyone wants to do.
Well, bullets are just flying all around him. Now, granted, you have to remember, this is 1941.
Technically written before anything happened, because I think we're
still a year away from
any
Pearl Harbor.
U.S. involvement was... Yeah, Pearl Harbor is like December 41. I thought it was around 41.
It is.
If I'm getting it wrong a little bit, I apologize. I'm usually pretty good for history, but I forget a little
bit.
Past
episodes show that we are not.
We are not very good at it. I should be better about this one, though. Captain America, this is written definitely before any of those things happened, before any true U.S. involvement, which I found, kind of interesting.
Well, it's kind of like the Wonder Woman was, too, but we were still going against the Germans. I mean, look at the enemies that they have. I mean, once Pearl Harbor happened, who becomes the target of most of America's ire? It's Japan. That's the one that we have an unfortunate history of rounding up people of Japanese descent and putting them in camps because we were so paranoid about them. We didn't do that to the Germans. So right now, the Germans are the clear enemy.
And that's why we're punching Hitler in the fucking face.
So we kind of talked about that for long, but there's not really that much that happens in this comic.
No, it's basically the first, 20 minutes of Captain America with some... For the movie, I mean. With
the first
differences in Bucky.
The first Avenger on Netflix now.
It's basically the Captain America movie, the first Avenger, about 20 minutes worth or so with changes to
Bucky.
Yeah,
we could just do bullet points. Germans are in the army and they're as spies, again, just like their last issue.
They're attacking U.S. bases very directly. The fact that no one catches them at all during this...
It's a bit pants. They all know about it, but it's like Spectre from James Bond. Everybody knows about Spectre, but they can't stop him.
Yeah.
Them,
It's kind of like that. So they show that a little bit in that first page, and then you see just Captain America sitting up on the side, and he's just so odd looking. He's got a little baby head.
He's a bit of a gangly looking fuck, too.
His mask isn't quite right, and I don't mean to... I mean, it's Jack Kirby, so he's infinitely better than me, so I can make fun of him a little bit. That mask isn't quite right. His booties are huge, and I think they'll stay like that until, 80s maybe? Maybe even past that, they stay like that for his booties. They stay like that for a long time. And his shield is more of a actual, kind of police badge-looking thing, but with an American flag on. It's not round. It's kind of what we see in Captain America First Avenger until he actually becomes more involved and everything.
So, what's the best way to weed out spies, John?
Create super soldiers?
Well, of course. That's like in Susie's Art of War, even. So they grab a weak, pathetic army dropout named Steve, and Professor Strange injects him with his monster serum, and he becomes a hulking mess.
It's pretty much a good guy Strange, kind of.
It is. Except he doesn't get as tall.
And then when they do the experiment, they're still in a pawn shop, just like you may have remembered from whatever movies.
I do not.
So it's very similar through that.
So a high-ranking U.S. official that was invited to watch decides this is the best time to blow his cover, and so he shoots the guy that made the serum, and then he breaks the serum for reasons, I guess.
Again,
didn't want to
Captain
steal
America,
it or anything.
First Avenger, same thing.
And Captain America starts beating him up, and in his panic, he runs into some electric stuff and kills himself.
That's the one difference. Instead of him trying to escape through the ocean, he kills him in the lab right then and there.
You really remember that movie,
I
don't
remember
you?
That movie very well. It's a really good movie. And then from that point on, he leads a secret identity sort of life where he's...
As you had to in the 40s.
Yeah, everyone had to. And I never thought of Captain America being a secret identity. I always thought it was always known who he was.
So the best way to get spies who are known for being very covert and, hiding and all that stuff...
Is to be public.
Is to have a very gaudy outfit and a shield and just go around punching their dicks off.
Absolutely.
And that's what he does.
Yeah, he does it. He does it with that, again, with the secret identity. And for some reason, and we'll see this more with Boy Commandos... They have a mascot, which is, a 12, 13-year-old Bucky?
I think that's being generous. I'm thinking more 9 or 10. And Bucky's like, hey, Steve, did you see what Mr. Captain America was doing in his papers?
Bucky, what are you doing here? I thought you were back in Manhattan selling newspapers.
I got kicked out of that job, but I'm here to fight them Ruskies.
Those are our allies, but whatever.
Access, I think you're thinking of. But he walks in on Steve...
Well,
dressing like Captain America.
He walks
in. Like, well, if you see me, you might as well be my sidekick.
Well, he walks in on Steve changing and is in, and instead of a cock, he's for a shock.
He lingers too long. He's just kind of sitting at the edge of the tent. Yeah.
And so he's like, well, I better make you my sidekick, but we're not going to give you a name. We're just going to keep your name. And so Bucky was born.
You're going to wear a domino mask, but your name's going to be public, defeating the purpose of the mask.
And so they go Nazi hunting, and that's the end of a legacy.
And then, but then that last panel, because we're not going to talk about all of Captain America number one. We're just talking the first story, because there's like five or six stories in this issue. They do kind of a Robin's regular sort of a thing with the member card for Sentinels of Liberty. And they're actively asking you to watch out for anybody that might be a spy in the U.S. I understand why.
America was so paranoid at this time.
Very much so. I kind of get it, but...
Oh, they don't have it in this one that you gave me. I'm going to see if I can pull it up on mine. There's like a list of America comics that you can look at. And they had like the stupidest names. So that was Captain America.
Fuck yeah.
Ba-ba-ba-bum-bum-bum-America.
And now for More Fun Comics 73. It's Batman. I mean Green Arrow.
The Emerald Archer shoots on the comic page with a shouting, okay. So, John, why do you think we're reading Captain America and Green Arrow? Why do you think I chose those two?
They're just white guys?
That's true about most comics at this time.
Well, Green Arrow's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Captain America, I have no idea. Captain America isn't, so I don't know.
Captain America is kind of Marvel's Batman in some respects. Not in all of them, obviously. He's not a detective, but he is a man to a regular man with that has honed all his abilities. Captain America does it through a serum. Batman does it through like training himself. But really, the two are...
I almost got with Green Arrow then a little bit, because Green Arrow's a very Batman-like type character.
Yes, very Batman-like.
Especially early on.
But, I mean, we have... They both have their sidekicks...
Mm-hmm.
The young boy sidekicks that are following around have their vehicles. So they're very much, I don't want to say that they're copies, but they're definitely, I mean, Green Arrow is obviously a copy.
They're definitely influenced by at the very least.
Yes. That's why we have Bucky in there, even though he's pointless to the comic, because that was the style of the time. Another reason was because, John, you rather like Green Arrow.
I've been really digging
I like Green Arrow
on
too,
off, yeah.
Just not at this point.
You haven't read any of the Rebirth stuff, to be fair, though.
There's more to life than Rebirth.
Yeah, but Rebirth's really good. I've been reading the Mike Grail run. I'm about halfway through that run. Grail. Hopefully I got that right. Hey, I can't pronounce things. If you want to send hate mail about how much I suck, you can send it to sac.alfred@gmail.com. Plugs. But I really like the Mike Grail run. There's some Kevin Smith Green Arrow stuff that I kind of like. There's a lot of... other miscellaneous Green Arrow runs that I haven't read, and then the Rebirth stuff has been a lot of fun. I didn't really care for New 52 as much for Green Arrow, but Rebirth has been, they've been bringing that character closer back to what I remember. Of course, Green Lantern, Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams run.
Nope, Green Lantern's the first one, because he's the star. He's not. Also,
If you want to hate me, you can just find us on Twitter. We are at SAC Batpod.
Also, I wanted you to pick your favorite like comic book character that we could kind of go back and look at their origins.
But you didn't want to. I like Green Lantern. The problem is Green Lantern, just like the Flash at the time, gets replaced. So these Green Lantern and Flash are kind of these Earth 2 versions. And you guys know about that. And if you don't, Wikipedia is your friend.
No, we're going to talk about it on the show, dumbass. I think the whole point of the show is that, oh, by the way, why don't you go put somebody else with it? No, we're going to talk about it later when we get into the Silver Age. Ah, never mind. Let's just go
through. We can always reference it and then talk about it more later.
So we have Green Arrow, which, as we've said.
Got to cut all that out.
No, we don't. That's great. You want banter. That's banter, buddy.
Just you being mean to me.
I'm not mean to you enough. You got mad at me when I was like, oh, wrap it up earlier. And I was like, you're boring the shit out of me with your opinions and your ways.
No, I gotta cut that out.
No, you keep this whole thing in. This is banned. Anyway, so, and I'm gonna keep referring to it too, so you can't cut it in.
Don't do that. It's gonna kill me.
So, like we said, pretty much a blatant Batman ripoff with a young boy sidekick, an arrow car, and of course the Arrow Cave. Quiver would have been a much better name. That's from Injustice, actually. They use it a couple different times.
Yeah, I
it would have been, though. It makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Just them being lazy. Green Arrow was never deemed popular enough to support his own title and spent most of the Golden to Bronze Ages as backups in different comics. Despite or maybe because of this, he avoided the revamp most DC Comics' most beloved franchises got in the Silver Age to make them more sci-fi instead of superhero-y, and he basically remained the same up until an issue of, oh, and there's also a run of Jack Kirby drawing Green Arrow, and those ones are actually pretty good. Surprise, surprise. Until an issue of Brave and the Bold that featured a new outfit courtesy of Neil Adams and a new attitude by Dennis O'Neill, which showed up in the Justice League, a comic of that time.
We're talking about good stuff now.
A little later,
that
they
made
would
me
have,
all warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, that Brave and the Bold might come back to be in the show at some point.
Oh, that's what we should have called Wink. The podcast. That's what we should have called the podcast.
There's probably already one. Yeah, actually, that we should have called it.
That would have been pretty good. Superstitious and Cowardly is dumb.
Yeah, but it's always like, what's the Simpsons joke? It's like, it should be hilarious the first time you hear it, and every other time it's less and less, like the B-sharps. Well, anyways, the two would then team up on a legendary run of hard-traveling heroes in Green Lantern, Green Arrow, featuring storylines tackling such topics as racial justice, class warfare, and most famously, drugs. The series was canceled pretty soon after that. It'd come back throughout the 70s and 80s, popping up every once in a while until the Mike Grell run, which you've already talked about, which you're a fan of.
Absolutely. It's kind of more I'm of in a, the middle of it, but I really like it.
It kind of isolates him away from the rest of the DC universe. They go to Seattle.
They don't talk about him, you know, hanging out with all these other characters too much. There's a brief appearance from Hal, but he's not dressed up as Green Lantern at all. I don't believe he is.
He's just
anyway.
A buddy.
It's very much, they try to pull it back.
Dinah doesn't have the canary scream.
They kind of do. They explain that was taken away, so it existed, but she no longer possessed it, basically.
And then she got it back.
And they did it in a good way, so I don't mean this is a negative. They kind of did like Chris Nolan Batman thing, where they kind of made it a little more realistic to a degree. I've been enjoying it very much.
That seemed so popular that after that was done, they killed him off for a little bit. And then Kevin Smith brought him back to life. In a very reference-heavy comic that's actually still pretty good.
I love it. But yeah, for a character that's introduced in the 40s, he really doesn't, and this is arguable to the definition, he really doesn't take off until the Dennis O'Neill, Neil Adams run.
He always was, but even then, it's like he never got his own series out
until
of it. He kind
80s,
of do a co
yeah.
until like that 80s run we were talking about, where we started with Longbow Hunters. And then after like the Kevin Smith rebirth thing, then he was a solid, I mean, he's always been a publication since then. One of my favorite, this is actually one of my first comics I ever read, was Archer's Quest. It's right after the Kevin Smith stuff. That is one of my favorite comics. That was like the first thing that made me, oh, I like comics. So that's why Green Arrow has a special place in my heart. And also like Captain America, he's currently leading the TV revolution in Arrow. Yeah,
that's pretty much
the tentpole of that franchise that they're all kind of interconnected with, isn't it? Because I didn't watch it.
Yeah, that was, at least for the TV universe stuff.
I don't watch the CW. I'm still mad that they took my initials.
I was thinking you were mad that they took your idea for Riverdale and made it all gritty and like
90210. I'd like to meet this moose. So our story begins with the best line ever said in a comic. Abraham Lincoln died by the gun, and so do you. It seems some asshole is just going around killing people and then saying that he's killing them in the way that their namesake, quote unquote, died.
The guy that has the last name Caesar gets stabbed. You think it'd be multiple people stabbing him?
This is so fucking stupid.
It's kind of...
John, we got like... This is Silver Age right here already.
It is.
Stupid bullshit like this, and we're far away from it.
This is like, what, 9 years before Silver Age really kicks off? Something like that?
So we cut to our boys, and they're talking about the case of the Golden Mummy that we just missed. Ah, raspberries.
That would have been so much better than this.
After they hear about the deaths of three members of the so-called History Club... They race to the football club, who's known for beating up on nerds. No, they go to the
In the arrow car. We need to talk about the arrow car. It's very important. They go to, like, his garage on the bottom floor of a building, and it has windows so everyone can see that the arrow car is parked in there. They don't need anonymity. They just have masks for, like, no particular reason, like Bucky. And they drive downtown in a ridiculous arrow car. That thing can't turn corners. I don't know how it gets downtown.
And so he leaves... He leaves Bucky in the fucking car and bursts through a window for no damn reason.
We're calling Red Arrow Bucky from now on.
Oh.
That's a thing.
So anyways, Robin's in the car and...
Insert psychic here.
He just busts through the window because he's an asshole.
Yeah, they shoot him through the catapult passenger seat, and he just busts through a window. There's no need for that. They're innocent people, and as far as they know, no one's life's at stake.
So what we find out is that the History Club isn't like a bunch of like historians or anything. It's just people that have unlikely names.
That's a really flimsy reason to
that
hang out
so
with other people.
That is so fucking stupid.
That's like two guys just hanging out because they both like comic books. That's really dumb.
And recording it. So Achilles, which is seriously his fucking name. He's like, no one's going to kill me by getting shot in the leg. I'm going to wear these metal boots, which isn't a thing.
They're still tip, like toe made boots?
That's a thing, but steel metal shoes aren't. So we walk around on a conveniently placed mat, and he's electrocuted because the killer put like... But something in the carpet?
They imply that there's some sort of historical club, even though it's a really flimsy reason for them to hang out. Achilles didn't get electrocuted to death. They cut his tendon and everything, and he lost. Like, that's not how he died. Also, he's fictional, isn't he?
Achilles, then...
I thought there's a mythology origin for that, mostly.
It's hard to say what's based on what.
Like, Jesus. You don't know.
That is true. So anyways, the killer tries to shoot Green Arrow now, and then they chase after him, pinning him to a wall with arrows.
I like that when they pin him to the wall after chasing him across a rooftop, but it's Green Arrow shoots an arrow with a rope on it across the way, and he doesn't, like, iterations you see him, like, use his bow to slide across the line or something like that. He's just doing some weird Flying Graysons tightrope walking. Like, the guy could have shot him off that rope at any point in time.
There's so much, like, stupid, like, look at what we're doing with our arrows. Isn't that cool stuff in this?
But they're not trick arrows, so I kind of like that.
It's just like, oh, look what we could do with all these arrows. Those cost money, dude.
But he's rich. He has an arrow car.
He does. So he dresses up like Muggsy, but his cover is blown when he goes to the hideout because he doesn't have four fingers like Muggsy does.
He goes undercover as a
even though he's just wearing, like, a domino mask after they take it off.
Yeah, what kind of... What he had a disguise on, but he forgot to take the domino mask off? Or did they, like, put makeup over the domino mask? Because that seems redundant.
So it's so fucking stupid. This is the best part of the thing. So they capture him and the boy, and they say they're going to kill him with, like, William Tell with, like, a gas leak. Which, historically, William Tell is linked to dying from saving a boy from drowning, or attempting to.
So is it just the oxygen thing? His links to killing people, like,
are tenuous at best.
Yeah, they're not very good.
I guess the suffocation thing, you should have filled the room with water, though, if you're going to set it up. Just don't mention it.
Don't give him too hard of time. This was rather sudden.
This also pulls to another problem with the comic, is that there's not a lot of famous archers other than Robin Hood, and since he looks just like Robin Hood, they probably don't want to make that comparison yet.
Well, actually, it's not because of that. It's because that they already decided that Robin, the boy wonder... took his namesake from Robin Hood and not from a bird or anything like that. So maybe that's why there's a weird conflict. More Fun Comics is a DC title, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the way they escape out of this gas, this room that's quickly filling with gas, is Green Arrow just throws a shoe out the window?
John, do you know who else shows up in this issue? Aquaman. Yeah, I think it's a DC comic.
I didn't do any research. I didn't read the other comics in this issue.
Green Arrow takes such a low note that when I was...
I love his outfit.
We'll just say, procuring this, it mentioned that this was the first appearance of Aquaman, but not Green Arrow.
I do want to say that we didn't talk too much about their outfits. They're so bad. They're wearing lame. They're wearing green t-shirts with a belt across.
It's a cosplayer's dream. You just got to get like a funny hat.
It's like he forgot that Halloween was coming. He's like, oh, I got a green shirt. We're good.
Well, in, like, the Jack Kirby stuff, they show why he calls himself Green Arrow, and it's just because he's wearing a bunch of fucking leaves because he's been trapped on an island.
That's more fun, though. That's way more fun.
So anyways, they get out by kicking a shoe. It's thrilling, and you're not going to want to miss it. Download it now through the DC app,
Comicsology. I think you can get through Amazon through Comicsology. They're all linked somehow.
Don't torrent it, though, because Trump is watching. So they find that, what's his name? Ezra Sampson, which no one would ever be named that, is bound. Oh, no, I jumped ahead. So they race towards D'Arc, which no one would ever be named that, who is tied to a stake in his own bedroom that's burning on fire. And so they just take him out, and because we have to show something thrilling here, thrilling is in quotes.
He can jump through up a window through a spring-loaded car seat, but he can't jump down like a two-story building?
Well, we have to show that they're able to do tricks, so he shoots a bunch of arrows to make him a ladder, which shouldn't be able to support his weight at all. Like this, much less the guy on his shoulders.
You were talking about how expensive those arrows are. How expensive do they have to be to also support human weight?
I mean, they got their shit down.
Well, you think so. The whole time Red Arrow was, Speedy, and it keeps calling him Red Arrow. He's got like four different fucking real names.
So Aqualad shoots a bunch of arrows out.
Like, he misses every time. Like, he doesn't hit Green Arrow once.
Well, he's making a ladder. I think that was on purpose. Anyways, this is stupid and boring. So we go to Ezra Samson. Yes, that's his name. Who's bound and gagged in a room next to a time bomb as the biblical Samson died. Read your Bible, people. Although later on they do mention that it would cave in, which is how Samson did die.
I think it's just a bomb with a little like wick coming out of it. Yeah. It's very cartoony.
So they shoot a water cooler on there, Acme brand. And then they go to the last man who's being forced to drink some poison, just like the real Socrates.
He doesn't just drink poison. Like, they didn't just poison a water glass. He is our serial killer that we saw early in the issue. Kind of looks like the Shadow.
He does.
And except he has a Darkwing Duck kind of a hat.
And looks like
he does
look
like Darkwing Duck, actually. Yeah, it's pretty great. But he's holding a gun on him, forcing him to drink poison, which, if you're doing that, you're kind of like, you're playing all your cards there. What's the point? I'm going to die anyway.
So he runs away from him.
After they bust in and try to stop him, yeah.
And because they pin him to the wall with arrows, because that's a super neat original trick that's not like Batman at all. And they find out that he's wearing stilts to appear taller. And he was one of the history club, and it's supposed to be like...
he was the guy previous that was gonna be exploded from that bomb, yeah.
But the whole thing is that, like, it's supposed to make you go... instead, it just makes you go, I don't give a shit.
Right.
So he runs away again, because Green Arrow and...
Speedy.
I can't think of
Aqualad.
Another, I can't think of another sidekick from the 40s.
Wonder Girl?
Girl. Boy Hulk. That was one, right? The Hulk's boy sidekick was Boy Hulk?
I think so. I'm weak on Marvel.
No, there was never a Boy Hulk.
I said I was weak on Marvel. Like, you caught me in some big lie. I've never been honest about that.
So anyways, he runs to his car and Green Arrow fucking kills him.
He does a very Batman-like thing, and he shoots one of his tires, and it falls off a bridge and into a bunch of rocks, and then he's like, cool, he deserved it.
So he goes to the rest of the history club that's left and is like, yeah, he was your treasurer, right? He's probably taking money from you. I just killed a guy. I'm not doing too good with it. I'm going to walk away.
They decide that that's the motive. How much money does that club take in like, dues and everything?
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of guys with similar last names. Like, they don't have to be of any social status or wealth. They just have to have a namesake of a historical figure. And that is it.
And then we end with them taking the fake bomb and putting it in their trophy
case. That was a giveaway, yeah.
And this is the thing that I hate about Green Arrow at this point. It's that everything is always like, boy, all our adventures together, huh?
It's a very...
This case, we better put this in our trophy case. We're not trying really hard. We're great.
It's a very... That's Scooby-Doo. What am I thinking of?
Stupid.
Yeah.
I never liked Golden Age Green Arrow.
He's
so blatant and so lame.
Well, he's kind of a ripoff of a lot of comics at the time, especially Batman. Arrow Car, Arrow Cave.
We've already
having a sidekick.
That,
well, he's a ripoff of that, and then Batman's a ripoff of Zorro and the Shadow and stuff like that. And he's so deluded because he's a ripoff of ripoff of ripoff that I think that's why Golden Age Green Arrow is like the weakest version of them.
So, John, we've had a couple vigilantes, a goddess, and somebody that was is in the American Army. Now it's time to see somebody that's actually in the police with Plastic Man. Police Comics number one. Now we take a peek at Quality Comics' most popular character, Plastic Man, written and drawn by Jack Cole. DC would buy the rights in the 60s and give him a minor reboot here and there. The writers of the Silver Age Flash wanted a stretchy character, but didn't know that they owned the rights to Plastic Man at that time, so they created the Elongated Man. They claim that there's no, like, influence by that, but he's wearing Plastic Man's outfit, basically.
They pretty much admit that later on in a companion guide to 52,
yeah.
The comic series from, like, 2005.
So, Plastic Man. Plastic Man is one of my favorite characters in comics.
He's fun right at the beginning.
The thing I like about Plastic Man is that, like, he kind of became a joke character after the JLA run. Grant Morrison basically made him Jim Carrey with stretchy powers, which up to that point, it's not necessarily that he's like a comic character, but all this weird shit happens to him. It's more like he's...
That sounds like a Grant Morrison thing to do.
It seems like I'm reading the Golden Age comics right now, and he's basically like a straightforward police and then FBI agent with like stretchy powers.
He seems a little bit goofier in what we're going to read, though.
He does to a certain extent. He uses those powers, but like most of what he does is like he deals with his sidekick, Woozy Winks, who's just kind of a bumbling sidekick. There's even like a number of comics where it's like he kind of hates Woozy. Not so much, but... So he's always been one of my favorite characters. He's one of like the strongest superheroes in comics, but they don't really mention that often. He's
pretty
much... They
just show it through feats of...
Yeah,
ability.
He's pretty much like, he can't be controlled by mind control because his brain keeps moving and you can't get a lock on him. It takes like extreme temperatures to stop him. He once survived being like blown into 1,000 bits on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean for like 10,000 years. And then they just formed him up and he's just like, yeah, getting bored for a while there. He's one of those Lethal Joe characters. I always really like the super powerful, those kind of characters. So that's one of the reasons I like him. I've been reading... Well, we've been doing this podcast. I started reading. I showed you like a picture that I bought, like all the Plessman archives.
Except for the really expensive ones.
Except for the first two. So if you want to send them over, you can.
If you want to find any shipping information, you can always email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com.
Such a shitty thing to do. Yeah, I mean, I've just been really enjoying reading that. So
when I read these origin things from like the 40s, this is the one I didn't have to struggle to get interested in.
Yes.
Like, this is just fun right from the very
beginning.
It moves
really good. There's some pretty good... So, why don't we just get right into it?
Wait, before we do, I gotta ask, why are we reading this one? I know why we read Captain America, and I know why we read Wonder Woman and Green Arrow and everything. Why are we reading Plastic Man?
Well, originally it was going to be, we're going to read those three, and I decided not to do Justice Society. Then I was like, okay, John, do you want to read the first Green Lantern? And I would put in my favorite character, and you'd put in yours. And you were like, no, I don't want to do
that.
No,
I don't like fun, yeah. That's what I said.
So really, it was just like, I was sending you the comics that we're going to read, Peek Behind the Curtain, and I was just like, fuck it, we're just going to throw this one in because I want to talk about it on the show because it's my favorite.
I'm glad you did. It's really fun. Yeah, let's go.
So we start our story from a different perspective, that of the criminals. Eel O'Brien has just cracked a safe and a guard shows up and the other criminals scram. As they're running away, he gets shot in the shoulder and a vat of acid, as so often happens with the comic
just
book characters.
Open vats of acid, no cured measures in place, yep.
Yep, OSHA wasn't around at this point. It falls on him and pours into his wound.
Fuck worker safety.
Didn't like, his suit is fine though, it is acid, but like, it nothing just, really got affected.
They call it an acid, it's really more of a solution because his clothes are wet and it seeps into the wound and that's about it.
I was reading like the 60s revival of Plastic Man. And they gave him, like, a nerdy sidekick. And so, like, everybody's like, oh, why isn't Woozy in this? You know, this sidekick sucks. And he does. So they decide that this was, like, the son of Plastic Man. So they had this issue.
It's like son of TV's Frank. I don't know if that's a good idea.
So there was this issue where, like, Plastic Man, like, we find out, like, his son's origin. And his son's origin is that, like, he had a vial of this, this acid just sitting on his thing. It's like a trophy. And the kid drank it one day as a baby. And got Plastic Man powers. It's so fucking stupid. But this is actually like a pretty good
origin.
That
makes more sense than the Flash and all the other Flashes just getting hit by lightning.
Yeah, but that was all Barry doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, time travel's a bitch.
Everything has to be Barry in that. And Vibrations. That's the Flash. Barry did everything. Barry's the best. And Vibrations do everything.
The chemical solution, because it's not really acid, seeps into his bullet wound. And he still manages to escape and somehow wind up in the woods. And falls unconscious.
Yep. He's gotten by a monk in a monastery who nurses him back to health and also, like,
he does
was
a very
like,
monk type thing. He's like, I'm not going to tell the cop. I know
well,
who
he gave
you
him
were,
sanctuary.
I'm going to give you a chance. Yeah.
And so, like, it's so great because it's like.
It inspires him very quickly.
It does. He's just like, it's the first nice thing anybody's ever done to him.
That was all he needed to be like, I'm going to be a good guy from now on.
And it's a good thing, too, because then he just, the next day, he wakes up with stretching powers. Stretches his arms out, stretches his face
out.
Yeah,
he doesn't go through a weird phase where he's going through hallucinations for like 3 days and just wakes up and Uncle Ben yells at him or anything. He just stretches powers and done.
In the 80s revival, I'm just talking about the history of Plastic Man, this stupid thing. It wasn't so much that like he got hit by the acid and it actually made him see the world in like cartoon vision.
Okay.
It really affected his brain. It's this really weird thing. And that
is that kind of basis for the Grant Morrison stuff?
No, not really. It's kind of ignored by a lot of people, but it's that's a really weird one because like Woozy's background is that he was like an FBI agent, got locked in a room with chemicals and his brain got messed up. That's so why he's so cheese. Stupid.
Okay.
We should
probably talk about this issue and not the issue surrounding Plastic Man.
So anyways, he decides after, you know, the kindness they show him that he's going to get them boys that just left him. He shows up for his take.
He's not there for justice. He's there for vengeance.
Well, he doesn't, like, say that he's going to kill him or anything. He just says that he wants to take them to get him in jail. He's going to turn his life around. He's going to be a better person. So he uses his thing and says he's going to drive the getaway car. And then the rest of the issue, there's not that much to really talk about. It's just Plastic Man just messing with
him. He fucks with them. He's like, I'll be the driver. And while they go up into this building, it's back and forth of, okay, I'm going to change into my outfit. I'm going to look like a reject from the Flying Graysons. That's his outfit, basically. Except he's got some cool goggles. And when he gets up there, he messes with them, stops them a little bit. And then when they go to chase him, he falls, a couple floors down through an elevator?
Yeah, and then bounces back up.
And then he lays at the bottom of the stairs and just waits for him to come back over.
And also, like you said, his goofy outfit. It's actually the only time that he would wear that version of the outfit where, like, half of it is black and half of it's red. It's just kind of a weird little, like, this time only, folks. So anyways, he catches him and brings him into prison. And then he decides that, you know, that was pretty fun. I'm going to fight crime as Plastic Man.
I like how he does it, though. Like, he's waiting at the bottom of the stairs, but as a rug, when he has him back in the car and he's back in his normal street clothes and everything, they're like, oh, we saw this guy. It was crazy. And they're explaining all the things he saw. And it's like, oh, man, that was really weird. And he just stretches his arm across the car and just scares him and everything. It's very comical, but it's really fun and lighthearted. And like you said, he captures them. He sends it to the cops. But he doesn't have any evidence on him at all. He just drops some mobsters at the place. He took the evidence with him and returned it.
And then
the cops have nothing to hold them on.
But they all like say, oh, we were stopped by this Plastic Man during a robbery. Okay, well, I'm a cop. That works. All
right. Comic one.
So that was Police Comics 1. It was very indulgent of me, but it was fun.
That's the thing, though. For an origin story for a character, it's so much more coherent than any of the other ones that we've really kind of read. At least from the initial, like, first time you see the origin story.
So now let's take a look and a few years, a year later. For Boy Commandos. So now, why do you think we're looking at the Boy Commandos, John?
We're indulging you just like we did with Plastic Man?
No, there's actually a reason for it.
Is it because we talked about some war stuff already?
It's because we're not really going to look too much into the war times.
So it's the psychics. It's endangering children.
It's endangering children.
I got it.
Like never before. And also...
Holy hell.
What?
No, I mean the comic in general.
Yeah, and also, believe it or not, there were three comics that were the top comics at DC. Superman, Batman, and the Boy Commandos.
Shit, really?
They were one of the most popular comics of that time.
It beat, like, More Fun Comics and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Jeez.
They got their own. It was done by Joe Simmons and Jack Black again. After 10 issues of Captain America. Did I say the name wrong?
You said Jack Black.
Jack Black? What the fuck? I have it written down in front of me. Joe Simon. I said Simmons, too. I messed that whole thing up.
You probably did.
Okay, anyways. So, like, they were so scared that these two were going to get drafted that they made them write a year's worth of comics before they got drafted. And guess what?
They got drafted.
They both got drafted. So, this is the Boy
Commandos. How do they end up drawing so much and writing so... I mean, writing so much, I can kind of wrap my head around, but how do you draw that much?
Jack was a machine. There was a story that I said when I was researching the Captain America thing that Joe wanted to get other artists in that kind of had Jack Kirby's like style down a little bit to draw more of the features because they had a whole comic to fill for their 10-run issue. And Jack was just like, no, I got this. Don't worry about it. He's like, that's a lot of work. He's like, don't worry about it. And he like did, I think, 10 pages a day or something like that. He was a machine. So anyways, let's talk about the boy stereotypes. I mean, commandos.
The too long didn't read for this is it's Inglourious Basterds, but with children and a French guy that you see later. So, but they do that weird individual character intro, but it's great at the same time.
Because, like, they write them phonetically down, so you get the feel for, like, their accents and stuff.
But it's also very stereotypical.
It is. Like, I have no idea what the British kid is saying. Cheerio and thumbs up, or folky eyes.
He said,
Twiggy
fish.
Gonna tay make take Heidi Prot for the Jerry's tonight.
They say fish and chips like 15 times after that. Like, I think they're just trying to find filler.
And then, like, the American is like Brooklyn. So he's like, my name's Brooklyn. Like, this is a character that Jack Kirby comes to a bunch of times. Actually, later recon that Kirby, that Brooklyn was actually Dan Turpin from the New God stories. And he shows up in like, and they both wear bowler hats, so it kind of works.
And then we have Captain Rip Carter.
Rip Carter. My job is to, and he's the serious one, which the boys rip on mercilessly. He's like, my job is to lead a commandos and also take care of these kids. It's like a sitcom.
It's just the kids, though. Why are you leading them into war? What the hell's wrong with you? What's wrong with the U.S. government? This is sanctioned as far as we know.
So we cut to a German commander who looks like an evil pig.
And we see this in Captain America 1, too. When he draws Germans, he really hates Germans because yep. He draws them as ugly as he can.
It's the propaganda of the time. So he gets a cryptic Bush,
He's going to stop on Bush.
No, well, it's like, I watched Fahrenheit 9/11 when I was in high school.
Yeah.
There's a couple things in it that like, man, this really doesn't have that strong of an argument. One is like, oh, there was a memo that Bush got that says Osama bin Laden is desperate to attack America. Okay, but like, he's not going to like, tell them what to do after that, right? It's not like, oh, the president, I guess we're not going to...
Jet fuel can't melt steel beams, Chris.
No, it's just like, I'm not saying that I support everything and we should cut that out. Okay. So Nazis gets a cryptic message, says the commandos are coming. And his subordinate tells this story under the watchful eye of, like, a picture of Hitler.
Yeah, he kind of looks like, and this is a deep cut, so if you don't know it, I don't blame you. Kind of looks like the captain from Robotech, the first series. Like, he looks like this overdrawn, weird character with a hat.
Yeah, that went right over my head.
Oh, this is a deep cut. This is for me.
So anyways, we cut to a war crimes trial that the Nazis are putting on for a French person that said that they should fight against the Nazis. It's after the French occupation.
I got a little confused about when and where they were a little bit, because it seemed... Some of the way they address it, it just seemed a little bit odd. Not necessarily where, but I guess the timeline of it seemed a little disconnected, yeah. Right?
It's where America has put some ground troops here and there, mainly in Africa at this point. We haven't really entered the European phase of the war. That's kind of just, it's a lot. And that's the whole thing with the commandos, is that they're being sent in Inglourious Bastard style before the rest of the army is there to cause trouble and to have the kids be all sassy. So anyways, there's these two guys. It is Victor Renault, who's a French civic leader. And then he's being, his lawyer is Laforge, and he's like a real dick, but he's eloquent, so he gets him off.
He's like House, but a lawyer, and French.
I don't know why he's, like, we never really get why he's such a hard ass, but like, he's always
like... Yeah, like, you don't see that he had a tragic story, or we don't see, like, he had family that died during the initial conflict.
He keeps calling him, like, a wretch that just drinks all the time and doesn't care about anything.
Yeah, you have no reason to know why he's...
He tells Renault that he got him off just so that he would be, like, embarrassed by that.
Ooh,
it's such a weird, phrasing. Like... Okay. I'm so mad at you right now. I'm telling a story.
Proceed.
So anyways, the commandos come up, and they're just like, boy, we saw a lot of fighting there. We lost a lot of good men, and we have the weirdest... This is a weird comic. That's another reason I chose it. So we have him saying, like, we lost too many men, and, like, Brooklyn's just like, ah, chief, you say that even if we lose one guy.
You heartless bastard, right? Brooklyn.
Dude, you're not supposed to be fighting at all.
You're like 10. Why are you that cynical? You've seen men die. That changes somebody.
So he's just like, well, you boys did some hard fighting. He actually says something like, you guys had the hardest time of it. Why don't you guys just go through the streets of London and get a hot dog or something?
Are they in London? Okay,
they're in London.
That's the part that confused me. They were in France, or they were talking about that Frenchman and everything, helping out the civic leader in a German trial.
Yeah, and they were in France at that part, occupied France.
How did, what's his name, get to London then, the French guy?
I mean, you can escape during war. It's very difficult, but he just kind of...
They gloss over that so quickly.
They do. It's kind of like my grandpa was... The story about the war that he told me was that after the Netherlands fell, him and a friend basically walked the entire length of the Netherlands for like weeks, just avoiding like Nazis, until they got recaptured and were forced to join the Poland army. He was always so bitter about that.
I don't know why I'm laughing about that. That seems terrible.
But like, you have to be careful, but you are able to go across enemy lines. It's not like they have border walls or anything. Trump. So anyways... he's in London getting a hot dog, but he doesn't have any money for it. And so the hot dog vendor just says,
yeah, the guy's kind of like patting his pockets and everything, like, oh, I know I had money.
He says, on my word as a gentleman, I had the money before I made the purchase.
And the hot dog guy is just a real asshole. Like, he just starts.
But at the same time, it's his own fault for not getting the money up front. So he decides to take it out of his ass and starts beating him up. But as he's beating him up, he keeps, like, hitting Brooklyn. And so yeah, like, all the kids just attack him.
How are you a boy commando, but you can't navigate somebody else punching a different person entirely?
He jumps in the hot dog vendor going, destroy my lunch, will yous?
But the best
and
part,
it's actually how it's written.
I just like how the one kid's like, hey, we want some fish and chips, eh?
And so they find out that Jordy is a knows France, and they need a guide through France, so they just, like, pick him up and kidnap him.
They have just a oh, you know, you're French. Okay, we're just going
to
take
we need one of those guys. And so he brings him to the commander, and the commander's like, I'm sorry they did that. Because he's, like, the character that doesn't fit in all this. He's, like, the serious character, and he's what a real person would do. He's like, I'm sorry they brought you. We do need a man for this job,
like the
but
goofy,
it's far too dangerous.
The goofy character usually needs, like, a straight man to play off of, so it seems more absurd. But when everyone else is the absurd one, you only have one straight man. Is that the same?
Yeah.
That's like a Three Stooges kind of a thing, isn't it?
No.
Well, the Three Stooges are
no,
all
it's like
Groucho
Marx. It's like the Marx Brothers before they got rid of their brother, who was a straight man.
Oh.
Oh, shit. What is... Why can't I think... Oh, man.
Is it Harpo?
No, Harpo's...
Yeah, I think it's Harpo.
No, Harpo's the mime. Yeah. Chico is the stereotyped Italian. Groucho is like the leader, and he's the one that does all the wordplay.
Curly Joe, that's
no,
who it was.
That was the Three Stooges. Why can't I think of the... I love the Marx Brothers. Harpo.
I just said Harpo.
No, it's not Harpo. Okay, we'll cut that. Cut that.
Nope.
Okay. So anyways, he agrees to do it, but they're going to be deployed. And there's this scene where we are... This is a children's comic, remember? It's in the pages of Detective Comics. That's why we brought Robin in, was to soften all this stuff. There's a scene where they're on the boat, and it's like, well, boys, some of you won't be making it. But just know that we're going to keep fighting regardless. And, like, Jordy is like, holy shit. I can't believe that I'm fighting with these people. This is crazy. Who would just be so cavalier about their deaths? Because he's a coward.
This is like some Saving Private Ryan type gore a little
bit.
We
go right into, like, two pages of them fucking people up.
How do they do it? It's like six kids and a French guy.
Now, they never really focus on the fact that it's the kid, but like if you look at the drawings, you can see the kids are fighting too with guns.
I thought they were probably it was just the kids fighting Germans and that was it.
Well, no, it's like a group of commandos and you think that they're just kind of along for the ride, but no, they're fighting with the commandos.
They explain that so poorly.
So it turns out that after they've killed like half of the Germans and
Why do we
France.
Need any other armies? Just have the boy commandos, you're done.
It turns out that they find out that Ronald from earlier is about to be executed as a leader of the underground. Now, one could argue that his death would probably like strengthen the underground because he'd be a martyr, but instead they decide that they're going to lose their connection if Ronald dies. So they pick
straws.
Because
you can't find another Frenchman in France.
Yeah, so they pick straws to see who's going to do it, and like it's like everybody volunteered. Even the boys. And he's like, well, we're going to pick straws and none of you boys can go.
Okay, all you boys can go. No men, though. Just me and a bunch of boys. That's fine.
So Jordy has like a crisis of conscience where he's like, oh, man, these guys are crazy. I don't want any part of this, but you're a fucking coward. Yeah, that's the right thing to do. Be a coward. You're going to live longer.
He kind of has like a Plastic Man revelation.
He does. And so he runs off on his own. And he switches places with Ronald.
He does some boy commando type
He does
shit.
Some boy, he is a proud boy here, this guy. So we find out that Ronald's like, hey, Ronald, Jordy took my place. And Brooklyn says, like, we was wrong about that frog. So casually racist. So they decide that they need to, like, because he's one of their own or some shit, they have to save him. And so they go back in, and we see the kids with guns again, and they kill all of the Nazis. And save Ronald from... I think they were going to hang him.
The story kind of ends, and the German officer is like, okay. And it ends up being the Frenchman!
And he shot him.
And
that's
the
end.
Of that caper.
I am LaForge.
Reading his French accent was actually pretty fun. They talk all phonetically.
They do.
That I always like when I read stuff like that, though. So
it does give the characters, like, Brooklyn, like... is complete personality.
The only time where it's a detriment is the British boy. Then it's like, I can't
understand what that British boy is doing. I have no idea what
he said. He said something about fish and chips 15 times.
Did we ever mention that one of them was a...
From Holland?
Was from Holland.
And he had like a...
he was
a
he was that nice Dutch boy.
That's what my mother-in-law
yeah,
calls
I know.
You.
That's why I said it. I was in my notes, but we never got to it. There was a French boy, there was a British boy, and then there was Brooklyn from New York. And the rest... So that was Boy Commandos, which was the most popular comic of the time. They survived a little while after post-war.
It's hard to maintain that. After
it is
that.
Definitely hard to maintain that. They like gave them superpowers and stuff, and it was like...
Oh, that changes.
Because they were trying... Yeah, and it just kind of...
I
sizzled out. It was definitely a comic for its time.
I can see why it stayed for at least a while, though. I mean, they can be fun characters, and
yes, but it, like we're kind of glossing over the child endangerment,
yeah.
And
people give shit about bringing Robin into this, in any of the Robins into this stuff, but the Boy Commandos, depending on the Robin stuff that we're reading, the Boy Commandos, arguably much worse.
10 times worse. They were shown with guns, and they were shown shooting people. So you said earlier today when we were kind of talking about this that they're doing a special Boy Commandos thing?
Yeah, there was, because this year is like Jack Kirby's would have been his birthday. So Marvel has been doing some stuff. Mostly, most of the stuff I see is like social media things. But DC's been doing a lot of individuals, a lot of tributes. Yeah. So there was a lot of one shot specials. There was the Commandy. How do you pronounce his name?
Commandy, the Last Boy.
Yeah. There's like that challenge where they had a bunch of different writers and artists do like a one shot each, and there's like 12 issues that combined to an overall story. I'm probably gonna wait for the trade on that one. Boy Commandos was gonna be is a one shot too, and I saw at the comic book store this past Wednesday, and I was like, $4.99, I'm okay.
Well, $5,
get out of here.
So what do you think of the Boy Commandos?
It's one of the stronger stories that we've read today. It's, to be honest,
there's a lot going on in it, actually.
Counting any of the things that we've read in any of the other episodes, this is probably one of the stronger story issues anyway. It's not necessarily the most fun, but it's the most coherent story.
Well, it's also a couple years after all the other ones that we've read.
Yeah,
it was
so
42.
There's a little bit of hindsight in it. It's one of the most coherent stories. I really like it. Much more so than I thought it would. When you suggested it, I was like, Boy Commandos.
I knew that
know.
This was going to be just a crazy one, though.
But it was really, it was good.
It was good, and it was something that, like, we're never going to look at another one again.
If you told me that people took this as inspiration for other miscellaneous movies and everything, or other stories, I'd believe you. Like, this strongly resembles, like, Inglourious Basterds type things in the way they kind of do things a little bit. I mean, the overall tone's definitely different, but there's definitely... It feels like there's some influences. So if you told me that's where some inspiration was taken from, I'd believe it in a heartbeat.
And with that, we go to the aftermath.
Coming next episode, we have finally reached Silver Age Batman. We get to see zebra suits. We get to see Robin dying at dawn. And so much more in future episodes.
So if you'd like to give us some suggestions on what we could read, why don't you tell us how to hit us up, John?
You can contact us through Twitter. We are at SACBatPod. If you want us to take notice, you can always use that as the hashtag as well. Or you can email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com. And while we do want episode comic book suggestions for future episodes, I really would like to talk to listeners and everything and have and feature things like their comic book collections.
We'll read
or
your
their
notes
artwork
on air. I mean, we're just about to release episodes where we started suggesting that, so hopefully some of you will hit us up on that. But
I really want to see like people's artwork for miscellaneous things. Not necessarily things that we talk about, but like their Batman artwork or their trade like comic book collections and stuff like that.
Yeah, are you an artist that wants your name featured in every issue? Give us a new theme song, why not?
Well, no, I don't want to. No, I do want to have that interaction with other people. I do want to show off talent people have because I can't draw crap.
Yeah, so hit us up. What's it? It's going to cost you like 5 minutes. What do you care?
Don't be mean to them.
You show a real attitude, mister.
Don't be mean to them.
Well, I'm nagging them.
Oh.
Yeah.
It worked on me.
It did.
Superstitious and Cowardly episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and so many more avenues. You should be able to find it through your favorite podcatcher relatively easy. If you go to our website in the description, you can find a full list.
So I'm Cowardly.
Nope.
No, we're not doing that bit. So for the podcast, I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer.
Thanks for listening. We hope to see you out in the stars.
No.
Hope that you're a plastic man. Be a Wonder Woman. had to fart that whole time.
Go ahead, fart. Just rip it right now.
Tina came in, and she was, like, hitting something, and I thought for sure, it's going to be a loud one. It's going to go right now.
Jesus.